Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you had a great weekend. Huh? You ready to get back into it? Nah, neither am I. Not really. Hey, Republicans are an absolute circus sideshow. They would be a lot of fun to watch and listen to if they weren't so scary, because these Republican senators and House members and judges are all in positions of power. And they are real dunderheads when you get right down to it. I keep thinking about the teabagging last weekend? Oh, my God. Well, the latest and I've said before on this program many times that Republicans really, let's be real. They have absolutely nothing to offer. That's why they're making a big deal out of a handshake between Barack Obama and Hugo Chavez. Oh, God, I can't stand this. But they really have absolutely zero to offer, and it would be kind of fun. It would be comedic theater to watch these clowns and idiots, except for the fact that they still have political power. Not for too much longer. I think America has had their stomach full of Republicans and will, over the next couple, three elections, really reduce them, put them where they belong. Well, we can't do that because that would be against the law. But two of the latest examples of their idiocy, first one by a couple of Republicans, not the least of which is, Tom Price, Representative Tom Price from here in Georgia, but also James Inhofe, the Republican from Oklahoma, who was in Afghanistan. And remember that old idea that the Republicans always shriek and wet their pants about, you're not supposed to criticize the President of the United States when you're on foreign soil. Inhofe is a crazy person anyway. Most Republicans are. Their brains have just been absolutely scrambled. And to watch and listen to them is really an exercise in forced concentration. But again, there's so much unintended humor watching these guys. Well, back in the first part of April, Obama unveiled his proposed 2010 military budget, and the Republicans jumped up almost out of their drawers as soon as the thing was announced. Tom Price, a Republican from here in Georgia, says, quote, "It seems the only place the president is willing to cut spending is on the armed forces." Okay, now hold that thought in your mind. James Inhofe, who was in Afghanistan, said, "President Obama is disarming America." Oh, God damn. President Obama is disarming America. See, this is where the crazy people, I don't know how to describe them without being highly insulting, but I can't help it. These crack not necessarily crack using, but these methamphetamine using freaks. All the women are, would have to sneak up in a glass of water to get a drink. The men look like they just stepped out of the pages of, I don't know. Jesus, I'm not very good with metaphors and analogies, because how do you parody these people who make up the lower working class and consider themselves Republican? I can't get past that part of it. But anyway, Inhofe is over there saying our sons and daughters are risking their lives fighting an enemy whose sole purpose is the destruction of our country and our way of life, while their president disarms America, and all this to support his welfare state. Now, how much BS can you find in that one sentence? The Afghans, their sole purpose is not the destruction of our country. Their sole purpose is to get us the hell out of theirs. So they can go back to living peacefully in the 13th century and beating their women and making them walk around in burlap bags and, you know, smoking their opium and sit around shaking their rifles at the sky. That's all these freaks want to do. Oh, I know. They're not freaks. They're just, well, yes, they are. Especially the fundamentalists, the Taliban and all these crazy mountain-dwelling tribesmen who treat women and little girls as if they were dust in the wind. And that I find particularly offensive, so you'll have to accept my critical, nasty comments about these guys. But anyway, Inhofe says our sons and daughters are risking their lives fighting an enemy whose sole purpose is the destruction of our country and our way of life. Where does he get that? And he goes on to say, while their president, the soldiers, their president, that Obama, disarms America, and all this to support his welfare state. See, this is time when I would just like to pimp slap people who say stuff like that. I really would. I'd like to use that technique they talked about in the memos, face grasping, where you grasp their ears on one hand on each side and pull their face up to yours and just scream and spit and so on and so forth, right? I would love to see Inhofe go through that for about 10 seconds. But anyway, Sean Hannity says, quote, while the nation's eyes have turned to a struggling economy, this administration is taking steps to cut defense spending. He goes on to say this, and that noise you hear off in the distance, those are the mullahs. Well, they're cheering. End quote, Sean Hannity. Disarming America, welfare state, mullahs screaming with glee. Right? Isn't this is what Republicans, whether they're twits like Hannity or Republican leaders like Senator Inhofe, this is what they're putting out. Well, it's more liar, more lying. I don't know. I don't know. All right, let's get this straight. Obama has proposed increasing the U.S. military's annual budget by $20 billion, from $513 billion to $533 billion for 2010. Increase. That means more, as in more than the previous year. Actually, it's the opposite of decrease. It means spending more on the military than the United States has ever spent. But to these lying sons of bitches like Inhofe and Price and Hannity and the rest of these right-wing freaks, an increase is really a decrease. Spending $500 trillion is really disarming America. Now, that number also doesn't include the extra $130 billion that Obama proposes spending on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So now we're up to $660 billion, an increase from $513 billion last year. But to Republicans, that's a decrease. Now, what does that money mean? Right now, the world's second biggest military spender is China. China spends about $120 billion annually on its military. That's about one-fifth of the U.S. total. Okay? Just like Bush and Bill Clinton, Obama's budget wants the U.S. continuing to spend as much on its military as every other country in the world spends on their militaries combined. I can't get my mind around it. Inhofe, Price, Hannity, Limbaugh, pig bastards, every single one of them. And that's okay. That's okay because they are Republicans. They're multimillionaires. They rip and steal and cheat and lie as much as they can. But, I mean, to put that out there for the American public to listen to it, that segment that listens to these guys, and then that segment goes out and buys 8 or 9 guns. Why? Because they can, I guess. Now, Iran, The laughing mullahs, Iran spent about $7 billion on its military last year, or roughly the same amount spent last year by Greece. Oh, my God.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Speaking of these crazy rat bastards going after President Obama because of his defense budget, the defense budet went up. 95% of Americans get a tax cut. Obama is not a socialist, so they're switching over to my favorite F word, well, second favorite, fascism. It's incredible what these Republicans are. I've never seen anything like this, and I'm starting to realize it's just funny as hell. That's the only way to look at these morons, is to see them in the light that they are casting about themselves. They are just, they're crazed. Every single thing is a lie. But the lies are getting more and more entertaining. He cut the budget, our defense budget. No, he increased the defense budget. He's a socialist. No, he's trying to save capitalism. On and on and on. And as the New York Times points out, while Secretary Gates, who the Republicans should remember was appointed by Bush and is a Republican himself, well, he called for deep cuts in traditional weapon systems like the F-22, the design for which was begun, I think, 25 years ago, and it's just sucked off billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. It was designed to fight the Soviet hordes as they rode across the valley. What the hell's a valley there? That would have been the entry point into Western Europe as they came screaming down on NATO. The F-20, oh, Jesus, it doesn't really matter. But Gates called for deep cuts in many of these traditional weapon systems, but he added new billions of dollars for others, along with more troops and new technology to fight the insurgencies in Iraq and Afghanistan. So what Inhofe is saying is that, you know, and the rest of these morons, these Republican morons, he's saying, look, we don't want the money for the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. We want the money for these antiquated, outdated, not that the technology is outdated, but the function is outdated, like F-22s. That's what we want. Why? Because that's a big business in the United States. That is the military-industrial complex that owns Jim Inhofe's ass. And in fact, all of the Republican Party and a good chunk of the Democratic Party. So when you hear this nonsense about Obama cut the defense budget. Well, I know you wouldn't believe it because you're not one of these crazy people. One of these crazy people. Now, you know, anyone can make an argument for reducing, this budget. We're spending $500 billion on weaponry. Why? You know, like we've said on this program a million times, as long as we have 9,000, okay, 4,000, okay, 2,000, let's get it down to 500, no, 200, no, 100. As long as we have 100 thermonuclear bombs on the top, sitting on the tops of 100 intercontinental ballistic missiles, we're safe. Or at least we can make sure that if anyone attacks us in the manner in which these weapons were designed in case we were attacked, we can turn the whole planet into a cinder. So, now, what else did these sick bastards do? The other manufactured outrage? Huh? They milked that Department of Homeland Security's report for all it was worth, right? Just kept going. Oh, my God! Oh, my God! He released that! It was a memo written by attorneys, sick sons of bitches in the Bush Justice Department justifying torture. There was nothing classified about it. There was nothing that the rest of the world didn't know. There was nothing that the detainees didn't know. So that when they were all released, as they have been one at a time, 10 at a time, they go back to their terror buddies, if such buddies exist, and they say, guess what? Okay, here's a list of things they do. But you see, the Republicans are so bereft and devoid and empty of any kind of idea about this country. They hate America. They wave their tea bags. They put a borderline psychopath like Glenn Beck out there for the terminally brain dead to follow and to worship and to suck his toes. And it's just astonishing. What is it now? Obama was seen laughing and joking with Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez at the Summit of the Americas on Friday. Another freak, John Ensign, Republican senator from Nevada, said, he told CNN's John King on State of the Union, John King is another right-wing nutball. And Ensign says, this, referring to Chavez, is a person who is one of the most anti-American leaders in the entire world. He's a brutal dictator, and human rights violations are very, very prevalent in Venezuela. And you have to be careful. Hey, jackass, he was elected 3 times. What do you mean he's a dictator? He was elected in 1998, 2000, and 2006. Human rights violations? Why, you mealy-mouthed son of a bitch, you Republicans have tried to overthrow him what now? 3 times?
Keep your contributions by your side and strong.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Is there anyone left? I think I mentioned this a few minutes ago. Anyone left who does not agree with or understand that every time a Republican office holder opens his mouth, it's a goddamn lie. It's just degrees of lying. It can be insane stuff, releasing the torture memos somehow endangers American military personnel, when in fact the opposite is true. That Barack Obama is cutting the defense budget when in fact he's increased it by $30 billion. Just on and on. It never stops with these people. Republicans are liars. The Republican Party needs to be executed. It needs to be decapitated. It needs to feel the blade of the guillotine. It needs to be placed in front of a firing squad. The Republican Party is hurting America. It is hurting us. And it needs to be done away with. John Ensign, the latest, this Republican freak from Nevada, talking about Obama laughing and joking with Hugo Chavez. Oh, my God, last Friday. And again, let me repeat what he said about Chavez. This is a United States senator. Quote, this is a person who's one of the most anti-American leaders in the entire world. Let's stop right there. That's not true at all. What he is anti, you dumb bastard. He's anti having the Bush crime family send CIA operatives into his country to overthrow his government, while at the same time positioning off the coast of Venezuela a Navy destroyer just waiting for the opportune moment to receive its orders from Cheney to go ahead and begin an evacuation. That's the words they were going to use, when in fact what they were going to do is further destabilize and start blowing up the refineries on the northwest coast of Venezuela. Chavez knows this. The Chinese know it. The Russians know it. The Brits know it. The French know it. Everybody in the goddamn world knows what we did. Except us. We don't know what we did. So talking to this fascist John King on State of the Union on CNN, Ensign digs his hole deeper. Chavez is a brutal dictator. How are you a dictator when you've been elected by the people three times? How does that happen? How does it happen in 2006 when he tried to increase his power through the electoral system? The people said no! Is that a dictator? Is Ensign that cold-ass stupid? Yes, he is. He's a brutal dictator, and human rights violations are very, very prevalent in Venezuela. No, human rights violations are very, very prevalent at Guantanamo, at Bagram, at probably 100 different black sites run by the United States around the planet. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows this. Human rights violations. Let me ask you something, Ensign, you dumb bastard, if you were listening to this program. What would you do as a Republican member of the Senate if you found out that a cadre of people inside the United States were planning to overthrow the Bush administration and insert themselves into power? What would you do, you crazy old fart? Yes, that's right. You would have them arrested by the United States military for sedition, thrown in prison, never to see the light of day again, which is precisely what has happened in Venezuela. How many times? Twice? Thrice? And every time when Obama finds out about it, he has his military arrest the plotters and throw their asses in jail. And who funds the plotters? Gosh, let me think a minute. Could it be the United States? And then Ensign says, when you're talking about the prestige of the United States and the president of the United States, you have to be careful who you're seen joking around with. Really? Is that true, Senator? Who you're seen joking around with? Well, let me see. Let me dig a little bit deeper into the stack here. What do we got? Let's see. Didn't George Bush, shortly after the attack on this country in 2001, didn't Bush, oh, and that attack, if you believe the official story, was handled by 15 Saudis. There were 19 bombers. 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia. Now, Ensign had no problem whatsoever with thanking George W. Bush for meeting with the Saudi ambassador just hours after a majority of Saudis pulled off the largest domestic attack ever on American soil. As our Democrat writes at Daily Kos, did it offend Ensign that our president at the time stood within miles of the smoking, ruined section of the Pentagon that the Saudi countrymen of the Saudi ambassador had helped level? What kind of sign was it when Bush was laughing and joking with Prince Bandar after citizens of his country, Bandar's country, had helped murder 3,000 people on American soil? Was that not more offensive than speaking with Chavez, who, I think we can all agree, has murdered no one in the United States? God damn, can you believe this? And what of diplomacy? You see, Republicans don't understand diplomacy. Obama wants to, you know, play a little grab ass with Chavez and giggle and hoot a little bit. Yeah. Did you see the videos released today of the stern conversation that Obama, no, you won't see that on Fox. You won't hear the pig people talking about that one. But there it was on MSNBC tonight, Obama with Chavez off in a corner giving him what for, and Chavez standing there with a stone look on his face, stone, not stoned, while Obama just read him the riot act. No, no, you'll not hear about that. What you'll hear about, well, Obama shook his hand and giggled with him. Diplomacy? As our Democrat writes, do Republicans still believe that the most successful way to deal with tyranny is to just not engage it whatsoever? Okay, what about the Chinese, whose cheap slave labor Republicans just love to exploit? Is their government not more oppressive than that of Hugo Chavez? Well, you know the answer to that. You know the answer to that. But these are Republicans. These are Republicans. Oh, my God. I would like to be the one who took the Republican Party into the onion field and end it. Obama defended his handshakes and brief chats with Chavez. And when asked about the notion pushed by these Republican freaks back during the campaign that his willingness to talk to enemies of the U.S. was what they called a sign of weakness, Obama said then the American people don't buy it. And there's a reason why the American people don't buy it, because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that if you talk to people, it's a sign of weakness. To the contrary, it's a sign of strength. Republicans are cowards. They're cowards down to the bottom of their teabags. They are cowards. And that's why they won't talk with our manufactured adversaries. Because they are stinking cowards. Every single Republican is a coward. Everyone. Sam Youngman, writing at thehill.com, says, at a summit where news of Chavez's gift of a book to Obama, a book, a gift, trumped discussion with Latin American leaders about trade agreements, climate change, global economic crisis, the president, speaking to reporters at a press conference in Trinidad and Tobago, conceded that he doesn't know how such meetings will play politically in the U.S. Obama said, I don't worry about the politics. I try to worry about what's right for the American interests. And on this one, I think I'm right. All this stuff going on, and these dumbass Republicans say, oh, he gave him a book! Oh, he gave him a book! Look, he gave him a book! Oh, no, he gave him a book! Oh, my God, he gave him a book! Now, remember, Chavez called George W. Bush a devil, which is the devil, which is true. I mean, it's true. Chavez is now considering naming an ambassador to the United States. See, they don't have diplomatic relations with the United States for one simple reason. We've tried to overthrow his government. We've tried to assassinate him. We've tried to ruin his country. Why? Because, that's right, he has oil. Lots and lots and lots of oil. As a matter of fact, he has so much that he got together with Joe Kennedy and Citizens Energy Corporation, and they got Chavez and Venezuela to give oil to their organization, so they were able to provide heat to the needy in Massachusetts who might otherwise have frozen to death or been put out of their homes this past winter. Giovanna reminds me of this in an email. Did Senator Inhofe ask ExxonMobil or Shell or Chevron or any other oil company that made outrageous profits off the hard-earned money of American citizens if they provided a drop? No. But Hugo Chavez? Yeah, through Citgo. He did. He provided free heating oil to U.S. citizens. Oh, son of a bitch. And your father still perfects his ways of making sealing wax. If he'll stop, look around. Here it comes. Here comes your 19th. Thank you.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. All right, back to Chavez and Obama. It, as Steve Bannon, writing at Washington Monthly, wrote, it may be difficult for Senator Ensign to understand, but sometimes U.S. presidents meet foreign leaders we're not fond of. Once in a while, U.S. presidents even negotiate with foreign leaders who are clearly our adversaries. Kennedy talked to Khrushchev. Nixon talked to Mao. Reagan talked to Gorbachev. Woo! Are we to believe it's scandalous for Obama to simply shake hands with the Venezuelan president? Not negotiate, not strike any deals, not come to any agreements, just shake hands? That a simple handshake undermines the prestige of the United States. Oh, my God. And by the way, as I mentioned earlier, there was a tradition in which elected U.S. officials refrained from attacking U.S. presidents while they represented the country overseas. Remember how many times Republicans have wet their pants over that one? Well, it seems safe to assume then that Republicans no longer believe in that tradition. Right? Yeah? Why are so many Republicans so terrified of Hugo Chavez? What exactly is it that he did? Well, Obama gets some support from, of all places, the conservative PM of Canada, Stephen Harper. Harper, according to NBC, vigorously defended Obama's handling of Hugo Chavez at the summit. In response to a question about the criticism of Obama by some conservative jerkwads in the United States, Harper said that he is a conservative, but he thinks that Obama's handling of Venezuela was effective at advancing America's values and interests. This is what Harper said, quote, "Let me be a bit of a conservative defender of the president in this regard. I was present, obviously, at all the meetings. Not the meeting between President Obama and the South American leaders, obviously wasn't at that, but I was present at the summit meeting of all the plenary sessions. I thought President Obama did an excellent job of expressing the values and priorities of the U.S. of America. I thought that he allowed a dialogue to take place and a good spirit to animate the room, which I thought made the meetings productive. I think it took the U.S. to a higher plane than the Venezuelas of the world. And I think it was very effective at moving the vast majorities of countries, reaffirming a position and very progressive position on the things that concern us. Democracy, human rights, open markets, trade." End quote. And then Harper concluded, quote, "I know I got some criticism at home, but you know, the U.S. is bigger than Venezuela in the end. The U.S. is the U.S. And I thought President Obama led in a way that was very effective at that conference," end quote. That's from Stephen Harper, who I know a lot of our Canadian listeners just don't care a whole lot for. And from what I've gathered, neither do I. But apparently Harper is not that much of a jackass like our politicians are, complete jackasses, all of them, all the way up to or down to Newt Gingrich. The guy who invented dirt politics. And you see these guys on the weekend talk shows, not challenged in the least. You know, when they talk about Chavez being a dictator, how does a dictator get elected three times? By the people. I mean, sure, Hitler got elected by the parliament, but how do people get, or appointed, how do people get elected by the people three times? Because he's a dictator? Because he's a real rat bastard? Or because he's doing something that the people in that country, doesn't make any difference what we think, the people in that country appreciate? Could that be? And, of course, it must have been all BS about Chavez providing free heating oil. to poor people in the United States. Oh, my God. None of that happened. Well, there you go. That's a dictator at work. That's a son of a bitch at work. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Did ExxonMobil provide free heating oil? Did BP? Did Shell? This was Giovanna's point in her email. Did any American oil company stand back and say, okay, look, we got a problem here. We have made billions and billions and billions of dollars. We're going to kick in 0.1% of our profits so that people in the Northeast this winter, people who are losing their jobs, people who are poor, elderly people who have Social Security, and that's about it, we're going to give them free heating oil. Did any American company do that? Did any British company? Did any Canadian company? Did any French company? Did any Chinese or Russian company? Huh? Did Mexico? Who did? One country. Oh, the dictator-led Venezuela! Oh, my God! It's astonishing. Just astonishing. So, all right, we have a break coming here, and we are going to revisit some of the stuff. Obama went to the CIA today. This guy has a lot of brass, doesn't he? Huh? He allows memos to be released that shows that CIA operatives violated the law left and right, domestic, international, treaties. And then he says, well, no, we're not going to prosecute him. And then he goes out to talk with them. And we'll have a little bit of that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Public Enemy number 1 writes in, greetings, Brother Malloy. Could it be that Chavez is deemed a dictator because he has the power of the people behind him that will not allow this imperialist government, ours, to just go into Venezuela and allow for Iraq Part 2? Isn't this the same so-called dictator that offered free oil to our fellow citizens who were victimized by Hurricane Katrina? Was it not the U.S. government that basically told Chavez to go pound sand at the expense of its own citizenry? Who are the real dictators? I think we already know the answer. Sincerely, Public Enemy number 1. Cat Mary from Memphis writes, from what I remember, Chavez, via Citgo, provided heating oil at a high discount to nonprofit organizations in about half a dozen states, mostly New England. The nonprofits then gave it to Americans in need. And yes, not a single U.S. oil company coughed up one dribble of heating fuel for Americans despite the oil company's record-high profits. As far as I recall, Chavez did this at least 2 years, maybe more. Conclusion, the socialists saved Americans, whereas the fascist Republicans wanted Americans to freeze to death. Can't lose any of them pennies, you know. It says a lot about morality, in my opinion. Not that Chavez didn't get some good PR out of it. Captain Mary. And then there's this from today's LA Times. regarding that book that Hugo Chavez gave Barack Obama. The book is titled Open Veins of Latin America. That's how it translates into English. And the subtitle is Five Centuries of the Pillage of a Continent. And it's regarded as a Bible for the Latin American left. It's found on the bookshelves university reading lists of a generation of students in the region. But it talks about the harvesting of the region's cotton, rubber, coffee, fruit, and other resources by U.S. and European powers. It argues from a Marxist viewpoint that such exploitation is the root cause of Latin American poverty. I don't get that from a Marxist viewpoint. Of course, this is written by an American writing for an American newspaper. But from a Marxist viewpoint, from any other viewpoint, would it not be exploitation of the people of Venezuela, their cotton, rubber, coffee, fruit, and other resources by U.S. and European powers? What if it were written from a Republican viewpoint? What would it be? Seen as liberating the Venezuelan people from, you know, money, resources, natural resources, liberating them from food and shelter and education and health care. Yeah, okay, I got you. The book was published in 1971, and when it was, Publishers Weekly called its author, Eduardo Galeano, quote, both impassioned and a hard-nosed scholar, end quote. Now, Galeano was a hero to the left in South America. He was ridiculed by the right and for many years persecuted by military dictatorships. This all according to the LA Times. He fled his native Uruguay after a military coup in 1973. Gee, 73 was an active year for the CIA down in South America, wasn't it, huh? How many governments did they overthrow? How many death squads did we organize? How many freely elected presidents were executed? Gee, golly whiz. We just had a hell of a time down there in the 70s, didn't we, huh? Anyway, Galeano fled Uruguay, ended up in Argentina. A few years later, he fled military rule there. His book, Open Veins, and other works were banned in many parts of South America until the continent began to return to civilian elected governments in the 80s. And Galeano, who is 68, remained pointed in his criticisms during a book tour in Mexico City this month. This is what he said. He quoted in telling an audience of several thousand university students who, according to LA Times, waited in line for hours to see him. He said, quote, the contemporary world is not democratic, but profoundly fascist, chauvinistic, militaristic. Yeah. Okay, is that revealed truth, or is that just an offhand statement of fact? I think it's an offhand statement of fact, don't you? Galeano went on to say, however, that he was pleased to see that what he called an almost black candidate, referring to Obama, had been elected president of the United States, and he hoped that that might help end racism. Now, the thing that none of these right-wing fascist Republican freaks who flop around on weekend television like so many fish that are suffocating from not enough oxygen. What they don't tell you is that the book that Chavez gave him was in Spanish. It's a language that Obama doesn't read. He doesn't speak. Now, the question is why Chavez didn't give him an English version. And as the New York Times says, if in case Obama is or LA Times, in case Obama is interested in really understanding Latin America, or at least Mexico, we at the Times Mexico City Bureau can offer the following reading recommendations as a start. And then there's four or five books here that LA Times recommends that Obama read. You know, our history in Central and South America is one of brutality, supporting militaristic dictatorships, organizing death squads, overthrowing freely elected governments, stealing their natural resources, brutalizing their people, murdering their peasants, stealing their water, everything. I mean, seriously, for the past 150 years, somebody please email me something that shows one good thing that the United States of America did, provided, offered to any country in Central or South America from an altruistic point of view. One thing, that's all I'm looking for, one single thing that the United States did. I don't care where you look, Panama, which is a country that we created, didn't we? Colombia? Cuba? El Salvador? Dominican Republic? Haiti? Venezuela? Bolivia? Chile? Brazil? Uruguay? Paraguay? Come on! Just one! Somebody send me one, an email with one thing that any U.S. government has done that was strictly, completely, openly a gift, a helping thing, a good idea, something that promoted real democracy in Central or South America over the past 120 years. Do it now. Send it to me now. Go ahead. Use every search engine you want to use. I don't care which search engine you use. Find it. Send it to me. Now I can sit here and wait all night, all tomorrow night, all next week, for the next 5 years. What are you going to send me? Huh? One thing. That's all I want. One thing. So for the people who want to get their asses in an uproar about Hugo Chavez and Barack Obama shaking hands, get real. Get real. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. For the people who want to get their balls in an uproar because Chavez gave him a book that details the exploitation of South America by Norte Americano, Americanos, go ahead. Get your balls in an uproar. It means one thing. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. And your mind has been eaten once again by the right-wingers. Tell me what we've accomplished where it concerns Cuba. 50 years. 50 years of a trade embargo against this little country in the Caribbean that has provided the highest standard of health care and education in the Western Hemisphere. Huh? That made sense, didn't it? This book is right. Galeano is right. What has the South gotten from the North in the Americas? Racism, chauvinism, militarism, exploitation, lies, deceit, predatory capitalism. Oh, you got a different opinion? Okay, I'm waiting. I'm waiting. One single thing. I'm waiting. Mike@MikeMalloy.com. Send it.
Strikes for higher wage, planet lurches to the right as ideologies engage. Suddenly it's repression, moratorium on rights. What did they think the politics of panic would invite?
Outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Well, what I'm getting so far, like Suzanne in L.A. writes, one thing that the U.S. has done good for Central or South America in the past 120 years that wasn't exploitative. Suzanne writes, well, one thing comes to mind, but it wasn't a government action. Last year, I housed a Peruvian illegal immigrant for 2 months until he got his act together and returned to his home village. He had spent a couple of years in California and Nevada working construction and washing cars. He got homesick and sick and tired of looking out for INS agents. I learned a little more Spanish and he cooked some great meals. So it was all good. Ah. We don't have a very good reputation where it concerns Central and South America, and I just wish that we were smart enough. Well, not us. I mean, you understand, so do I. But I wish that our elected officials had more of an understanding of the history. And the Democrats, too, especially Democrats. Republicans are scum, slime, and swill. But especially Democrats in Congress, the House and the Senate, most of them don't have a clue. They have no idea. They buy into the right-wing rhetoric about Central and South America. Bunch of communists down there, that's all, leftists. You know, even the Catholic Church, but especially the Catholic Church, tried to smash and did successfully any kind of liberation theology down there to try to free the people. Oh, no. So you have U.S. political imperialism, corporate imperialism, and then you have the imperialism of the church. What the hell? I mean, you talk about getting the triple whammy. But the little brown people of Central and South America, you see, were supposed to shut up and understand that their big brother up north, the Yankees, the Americanos, and the Spanish Church the Roman Church in Italy, they all have just the best interests of the little brown people at heart. You know, oh yeah, little brown people, we'll take care of you. Would you like some mosquito netting, huh? Just step back and let us have all of your resources. Let us have your bodies, your souls, your brains, your hearts. Somebody else wrote, well, one good thing we did was make coca and marijuana illegal, so that gave the economies of some of these countries something to rely on until they managed to throw off U.S. imperialism. Of course, there would be no market for coca and marijuana if it wasn't for this big vacuum sweeper up north called the United States. Give me more! You know, we have arguably, we have growers in this country, and they're not just in Northern California, they're all over, who grow the best marijuana on earth. You want to end the smuggling of marijuana into the United States, just legalize it. But no, can't do that. Can't do that. All right, moving on. Have I got time to this prairie too? Yeah, I think I can. This is I left a couple of his missives hanging last week. He writes tonight, the stock markets took another big dive today on word that the banks are much worse off than you would think, given their latest claims of profitability. The profit numbers did not bear much scrutiny to begin with. They shifted their quarter forward a month to ditch a month of heavy losses. Then there is the accounting change that allows them to stop counting their toxic assets as a current liability, and so on and so on and so on. The latest news is even more troubling as it portends a coming crisis. The Treasury Department is proposing to convert the preferred stock that the Bush administration bought in all the big banks under TARP into common stock. This means the banks can use this money to directly offset losses. Apparently, the Treasury Department is anticipating the banks taking really big losses. Not a hopeful indicator of where the economy is going, since really big losses would mean a lot more home foreclosures and business failures. Converting to common stock also means that the taxpayers go to the back of the line in case of bankruptcy. Some have pointed out in a conspiratorial tone that all this common stock makes Uncle Sam the majority shareholder of most of these banks, free to start dictating how the banks are run. Of course, any bank that fails to meet liquidity standards can be seized, lock, stock, and barrel by the government without notice, and these bailout banks have already failed that test. 25 small to medium banks have been taken over so far this year, and some industry watchers are predicting that hundreds more will fail later this year. So ends another day in the tug of war between the Obama administration, which is desperately trying to save capitalism from itself, and the capitalists who want to maintain the illusion that they are still the masters of the universe for one more day. I think I'll go to bed early tonight. Maybe under it. Prairie 2. Go to this website, prairienumeral2.com. You'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
So I take a look around.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, there is a massive list of U.S. activities in Central and South America that goes back, oh God, what, 100 and, well, like I said, about 100 and, actually, it starts with the doctrine of manifest destiny, where the United States goes to war with Mexico and takes a third of Mexico's territory. But the website, if you want to write this down, I'll give it to you in a second. So if you want to get something right with, you should read this. You really should. But let's just take a look at the highlights of the Reagan years. All right. You want to do that? You got a minute? Okay. Because a lot of people are struggling to send me something. People have been saying the Peace Corps or, the Peace Corps went there because after, a century and a half of exploitation by U.S. corporations, the Peace Corps was desperately needed or something like it to go down there and help people build wells, you know, or 1980, a right-wing junta takes over in El Salvador. U.S. begins massively supporting El Salvador, assisting the military in its fight against the FMLN guerrillas. Now, let me digress. That's the group that just won the presidency in El Salvador. Death squads proliferate. Archbishop Romero is assassinated by right-wing terrorists. 35,000 civilians are killed in a three-year period. The rape and murder of four U.S. churchwomen results in the suspension of U.S. military aid for 1 month. The U.S. demands that the junta undertake land reform. Within 3 years, however, the reform program is halted by the oligarchy. And Ronald Reagan famously said about El Salvador in 1980, quote, "The Soviet Union underlies all the unrest that is going on there." Jesus God. Also 1980, the U.S., seeking a stable base for its actions in El Salvador and Nicaragua, tells the Honduran military that it is going to give it $100 million of aid a year and began basing the Contras on Honduran territory. Death squads are also active in Honduras, and the Contras tend to act as a state within a state. 1981, the CIA steps in to organize the Contras in Nicaragua, who started the previous years a group of 60 ex-National Guardsmen, Nicaraguan National Guardsmen, loyal to the Somoza family. By 1985, there are about 12,000 of them. 46 of the 48 top military leaders are ex-National Guardsmen, Somoza loyalists. The U.S. also sets up an economic embargo of Nicaragua and pressures the IMF and the World Bank to halt loans to Nicaragua. Also in 1981, General Torrijos of Panama is killed in a plane crash. There's a suspicion of CIA involvement due to Torrijos' nationalism and friendly relations with Cuba. 1982, a coup brings General Efrain Rios Montt to power in Guatemala and gives the Reagan administration the opportunity to increase military aid. Rios Montt's evangelical beliefs do not prevent him from accelerating the counterinsurgency campaign. You know, murder, mayhem. 1983, another coup in Guatemala replaces Rios Montt. The new president, Oscar Mejia Victoris, was trained by the U.S. and seems to have cleared his coup beforehand with U.S. authorities. Well, there's a surprise. 1983, U.S. troops take over tiny Grenada. Rather oddly, it intervenes shortly after a coup has overthrown the previous socialist leader. One of the justifications for the action is the building of a new airport with Cuban help, which Grenada claimed was for tourism and Reagan argued was for the Soviets. Later, the U.S. announces plans to go ahead and finish the airport to develop tourism. 1983, the Boland Amendment prohibits CIA and Defense Department from spending money to overthrow the government of Nicaragua, a law the Reagan administration cheerfully violates. 1984, CIA mines three Nicaraguan harbors. Nicaragua takes this action to the World Court, which brings an $18 billion judgment against the United States. The U.S. refuses to recognize the court's jurisdiction in the case. We mined Nicaraguan harbors. Now, what do you think would happen if a Central or South American country mined New York Harbor or mined Boston Harbor or mined the harbor at Charleston, South Carolina, or Savannah, Georgia? What do you think? Are these not acts of war?
Yes, Mike, they are.
1984, U.S. spends $10 million to orchestrate elections in El Salvador, something of a farce, since the left-wing parties are repressed and the military has already declared that it will not answer to the elected president. 1989, U.S. invades Panama to dislodge CIA boy gone wrong, Manuel Noriega, an event which marks the evolution of the U.S. favorite excuse from communism to drugs. Yeah, see, we no longer fight communism in Central or South America. We fight, except in Colombia, we fight
drugs.
Well, no, I'm sorry. We don't fight communism in any of the Central or South American countries. It's all drugs. That's what the fight is now. Communism, as the right-wingers would tell you, was bloodied and defeated by the United States. Or, I'm sorry, by Ronald Reagan. So. And Steve writes, Mike, I'd like to know, after understanding what our country has done, what justification is there for the U.S. to survive as a nation after committing so many crimes against humanity? We took apart Germany and Japan in response to their military actions. What of the United States? What about us? Well, no, Steve, we're the good guys. We ride the white horse, and that's why the right-wingers have to hobble or humiliate or get rid of Barack Obama, because he's just not part of the group. Well, he's trying to be in a lot of ways, right? At least that's what the right-wingers or the lefties, the far lefties would say. Waterboarding. The Christian Science Monitor has an interesting article about this. Two prisoners who were waterboarded by the CIA got it 266 times. Now, you know what Limbaugh, the pig man, will tell you? Well, there you go. That proves it's not fatal. 266 times on two prisoners. The New York Times reported that two Al-Qaeda suspects were subject to the method, which is partial drowning, 266 times. The Times reports that according to a recently released interrogation memo, Al-Qaeda operative Abu Zubaydah was subjected to waterboarding 83 times in 1 month, August 2002. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who has confessed to just about everything, including the September 11th attacks, was subjected to waterboarding 183 times in March of 2003. Now, that version of events, which comes from these interrogation memos, is very different from the one reported by ABC News in December 2007, when former CIA officer John Kiriakou, who was involved in the interrogation of Mr. Zubaydah, claimed he had only been waterboarded once for 35 seconds. And Kiriakou said, quote, the next day he told his interrogators that Allah had visited him in his cell during the night and told him to cooperate, end quote. Kiriakou said, quote, from that day on, he answered every question. The threat information he provided disrupted a number of attacks, maybe dozens of attacks, end quote. Now, we all know that that's sheer lunacy. It's just total lies, made-up nonsense. It's incredible. New information came out over the weekend thanks to the investigative work of bloggers like Marcy Wheeler, who found it in the footnotes of the interrogation memos released last week. She put it on her blog, Empty Wheel. Empty Wheel. That's Marcy Wheeler's. Information on the frequency of the practice and the amount of water used each time was redacted from some copies of the memos, but not from others. Ms. Wheeler points out that it is unclear how the CIA could use the method on these suspects so many times and still manage to abide by its own guidelines. And if you take, if you take a look at this, where is that thing I've got, Kathy? If you break this down, where is it? Damn it. Okay. The same memo passage explains how the CIA might manage to waterboard these men so many times in 1 month. And we'll share those numbers with you when we come back. It's pretty mind-boggling. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, I started off on this waterboarding thing I'll get to in a second, but I told you I would give you a website for kind of a partial list of our involvement. It goes on and on and on. It's all dated. Gives you the dates, the countries, and what the U.S. Did. The website is Zompist, Z-O-M-P-I-S-T, Z-O-M-P-I-S-T.com, Zompist.com/LATAM, as in Latin America, LATAM.html. Let me give it to you again. Zompist, Zompist.com, Zompist.com/LATAM.html. Check it out. And somebody can see, you know, I'm sorry, it was a trick on my part, you know, asking that. Tell me one thing that the United States has done from an altruistic point of view to assist over the past 130 years anyway, any country in Central or South America. And of course the answer is nothing. There is nothing. Ward in Japan writes, Mike, it's a drop in the bucket or a tear in a river of tears, but John Kennedy did start the Peace Corps and they have done some good. Of course, JFK had to be killed precisely because he was for peace and started back channel talks with Khrushchev and Castro on how to achieve it. Then implemented a nuclear test ban treaty and planned to withdraw from Vietnam. After JFK's assassination, the Peace Corps has been used to provide cover for U.S. military moves and CIA meddling. Some call it, quote, the smile on the devil's policy, end quote. Yeah. Anyway, back to this this report in the New York Times and brought to my attention by the Christian Science Monitor about the lies told even in the in the owning up by some members of the Bush crime family who said, okay, yeah, we did a little bit of torture, but not much. And here they have two people to whom it was done 266 times, waterboarding. And a guy named John Kiriakou, who is a CIA officer, claimed that Zubeda had only been waterboarded once, and that was only for 35 seconds, and then he spilled his guts. That's what this guy said. Okay, the same memo passage that Marcy Wheeler at her blog Empty Wheel found explains how the CIA might manage to waterboard these men so many times in 1 month. Even though these with these chilling numbers, the CIA math doesn't add up. Here's what it says in the memos. Quote, "We're authorized, it may be used for two sessions per day of up to 2 hours, waterboarding. During a session, water may be applied up to six times for 10 seconds or longer, but never more than 40 seconds. In a 24-hour period, a detainee may be subjected to up to 12 minutes of water application. Additionally, the water board may be used on as many as 5 days during a 30-day approved period," end quote. Okay, so here it is. Two-hour sessions a day with six applications of the water board each. That were equals 12 applications in a day. But to get up to the permitted 12 minutes of waterboarding in a day, with each use of the water board limited to 40 seconds, you'll need 18 applications in a day. Now, assuming you use the larger 18 applications in one 24-hour period and do 18 applications on 5 days within a month, you've waterboarded 90 times in a month. That's still just half of what it is now revealed was done to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I get the feeling somebody's lying. Don't you? Interrogators who spoke to the New York Times on condition of anonymity said they believed Zubaydah told them everything he knew before waterboarding began. They communicated this to agency higher-ups in Washington, who nonetheless insisted on the use of the practice and asked to watch it take place. There you go. We want to see. We want to see. You say you've got all the information you're going to get? Nah. We want to see. Do it again. We're going to come down there and watch it. Can I bring the wife? Yeah, I can, bro. Well, I'm asking you. I'm your superior. I'm going to bring the wife. Or maybe the girlfriend. And I want to come down there and watch you waterboard. Partially drown. Now, of course, the irony of all this is that it turned out that Zubaydah, far from being what the CIA claimed he was, Zubaydah turned out to be nothing but a low-level bookkeeper of sorts who maintained and managed the travel schedules. And I don't mean to the U.S. I mean within Afghanistan or Pakistan or Saudi Arabia or wherever the hell they traveled, of these top operatives of this so-called Al-Qaeda. He was a scheduling person. A scheduling person. You might have called him a secretary. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
magic to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now. Your life. Listen to the tide slowly turning. Wash your heart.
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Oh, by the way, I think Wednesday night we will have the next episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. We're putting it together today. Oh, God, you're going to love it. I think we'll do that Wednesday. This is from Justine in Maryland, who writes, Mike, just as the Downing Street memos revealed the Bush administration's fixing the facts around the unjustified invasion and occupation of Iraq, we once again see the so-called legal opinions of the Bush torture memos trying to justify the unsupportable war crimes after the torture had already begun. As Jason Leopold documents, the writer, Al-Qaeda operative Abu Zubaydah was picked up and taken to one of the CIA's black sites in March 2002, where he and others were subjected to interrogations that included waterboarding, according to a Justice Department report released last year. However, the first set of Bush administration torture memos designed to give cover to U.S. agents involved in these activities was not written until August 2002. 5 months later. Thus, the agents were not, as we've heard over and over and over again these past few days, they were not acting under alleged legal advice. The powerful Downing Street memos were barely mentioned in the media and were discounted when they actually were discussed. I even remember the so-called experts saying that the term fixing the facts had a different meaning in British English than in American English. Are you effing kidding me? And yet this was the BS spewed across our media. So now we are hearing nothing about the Bush crime syndicate twisted their heinous policies and memos prepared long after their torture program was established and approved. It's not surprising. It's just further down the rabbit hole. Justine in Maryland. It's horrifying. And it just doesn't, it doesn't stop. Doesn't stop, does it? Just the hits just keep on coming. Now, here we are just a few days after Obama ordered the release of those memos, because they were going to be released anyway as a result of a lawsuit. The memos that detailed all this torture perpetrated by the CIA on hapless goat herders and secretaries and maybe an Al-Qaeda operative or two. So, in the middle of all this, Obama went today to the CIA's Virginia headquarters to defend his decision about releasing these or allowing them to be released and trying to bolster the morale of the employees. Obama said, quote, to the crowd, I acted primarily because of the exceptional circumstances that surrounded these memos, particularly the fact that so much of the information already was public. He said today that a court case was going to force the memos to be released anyway and that much of what they contained had already been compromised through leaks to news media. A round of cheers erupted when CIA Director Leon Panetta introduced Obama to the CIA employees, who quickly reassured them that they had his backing, Obama's backing. He said, I know the last few days have been difficult. You need to know you've got my full support. Now, he explains why he ended the torture of prisoners as ordered by Cheney and the other Bush crime family gangsters. And then he told the assembled CIA agents and employees that it's time to learn from our, quote, mistakes, end quote, and move forward.
I have put an end to the interrogation techniques described in those OLC memos. And I want to be very clear and very blunt. I've done so for a simple reason, because I believe that our nation is stronger and more secure when we deploy the full measure of both our power and the power of our values, including the rule of law. I know I can count on you to do exactly that. So don't be discouraged by what's happened in the last few weeks. don't be discouraged, that we have to acknowledge potentially we've made some mistakes. That's how we learn. But the fact that we are willing to acknowledge them and then move forward, that is precisely why I am proud to be President of the United States, and that's why you should be proud to be members of the CIA. All right.
Well, does President El Presidente really mean that? He says, don't be discouraged that we have to acknowledge potentially we've made some mistakes. What does he mean by that? Potentially. Well, we know what that means. Possibly, maybe, perhaps. We've made some mistakes. Mistakes? You mean overt, violent violations of the law? I realize what Barack Obama has to do. I really do. I'm no longer going to, you know, scream and yell and froth and foam over the fact that he's not a liberal. I mean, we knew that before he was elected. But I think we can understand why he's saying and doing some of the things he's doing, mainly because he has a wife and two children and would like to live probably to see them grow up. And again, two words, John Kennedy. So when he says we have to acknowledge potentially, possibly, probably, maybe, not even probably, maybe, there's a slight chance, could be, that we made mistakes. Mistakes. He says that's how we learn. Mr. President, you're not really out there at Langley, Virginia, talking to a bunch of high school seniors on a field trip. That's how we learn? Okay. He's the president, not moi. Email here from, got time for this? No, I don't think so. We'll do it when we come back. And we're going to start taking some calls here in a moment. So, stick around for that. The news on Michelle, where is this? Michelle Bachman. Last fall, the Minnesota Independent reported, that's the newspaper there, reported that Michelle Bachman's campaign made a $9,000 charitable contribution to a faith-based drug treatment program, Minnesota Teen Challenge, in an effort to wash its hands of tainted contributions. The Minnesota Independent has recently learned that Minnesota Teen Challenge returned the donation to Bachman 2 weeks later. The executive secretary or executive director of Minnesota Teen Challenge told Minneapolis Independent, quote, we didn't want to be involved if it was dirty money, end quote. Now, her close ties to the guy who gave her this money, a guy named Frank Venice Jr., her close ties became public before the election when it was revealed that she had written a letter requesting a presidential pardon for this guy. He's a convicted money launderer and drug smuggler. She withdrew the letter when Venice's name became connected to a multi-billion-dollar Ponzi scheme scandal. But she gave back only a portion of the tens of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions she has received from Venice and his family since 2005. Really? Is that right, Michelle? Huh? You know, when you're talking about that investigation of members of Congress, isn't that the way it always goes? Michelle Bachman knows in her mind, in her heart, that eventually she's going to be investigated. So she starts talking about investigations in much the same way as these freakish Christian evangelical people rail against gay sex, and then it turns out they're having it. You ever notice that? I'm
Defining Anger Management. It's Mike Malone.
It is 21 past the hour. Eric, writing from Canada, says Obama's got it right. Slowly release documents and details about torture. Keep the subject at the top of the news cycle. Pardon the lower level offenders, people who may have been present but didn't do the deed. I'm sure these people were under a lot of pressure from their superiors. As for their testimony, it seems more and more people are stepping forward, and I'm sure Obama's reassurances to the CIA today will go a long way in bringing forward more people with secrets to tell. Could be. I hope this is all a form of getting the truth out in a manner that gives Barack Obama, makes him bulletproof, literally and figuratively speaking. Mary writes in, Mike, as I listen to you justifiably railing at the Republicans, I wonder if you have read about the latest example of what author Rick Perlstein calls the E. coli conservatives.
Ooh.
Last Sunday's Chicago Tribune had an investigative piece titled Poison in the Well about the drinking water of Crestwood, Illinois, a working-class village of about 11,000 people in the far south suburbs of Chicago. It seems the officials of Crestwood knowingly and purposely mixed contaminated municipal well water with treated Lake Michigan water. Why? Well, deep into the article, I read that, quote, EPA investigators questioned a village official who confirmed to them that, to save money, he and others frequently turned on a valve that allowed untreated water to flow into Crestwood's distribution system, end quote. The former mayor, Mary writes, Chester Stronchek, retired in 2007. If you do a Google search, you'll find that he is, guess what, a Republican. I live in a south suburb even further south from Crestwood and can tell you that old Chet was often in the news and seemed to relish it. He loved to be described as a tight-fisted mayor about money. He was combative, arrogant, and a big tax cutter. He bragged often that his village had the cheapest water rates in Cook County. Well, now I guess we know why. The untreated water that village officials allowed into the drinking water of residents was contaminated with PCE, a dry cleaning solvent. Crestwood officials lied to the Illinois EPA people as far back as 1986, telling EPA that the village got all this water from Lake Michigan. According to the Chicago Tribune, which filed Freedom of Information Act requests, officials drew up to 20% of the village's water supplies from the contaminated water in some months. Nice people, huh? To quote someone I listen to each night, have I told you how much I hate these people? Mary. Yeah, isn't that, and imagine, you know, they'll do that, Republicans will do that to their own people. The citizens of their own township or county or village or city or state or country. Republicans will do that over and over again. Imagine what they do to people in other countries. No, wait, don't do that. Don't imagine. Don't imagine. One of the drawbacks of authorizing unlimited electronic surveillance, which is what the United States Senate and House did, they did. If nothing else, they did it by a passive inability to stand up to George Bush when all this began. And don't forget, it began as soon as he came into office. This unrestricted wiretapping and checking of emails and reading people's mail and stuff, it happened long before 2001. It started immediately. From what I've read from some real good investigative reporters, it started within a month after Bush took office. So this nonsense that it was reaction to 2001 is just that, nonsense. But one of the drawbacks of supporting that by keeping your mouth shut, especially if you're part of the government or the congressional intelligence organization, is that you can be picked up. Your phone can be tapped and your messages can be listened to also. Take, for example, Jane Harmon. This is from tomorrow's edition of the Times. A California congresswoman was overheard on telephone calls intercepted by the National Security Agency agreeing to seek favorable treatment from the Bush administration for two pro-Israel lobbyists investigated for espionage, according to current and former government officials. One official who has seen transcripts of several wiretapped calls said the lawmaker, Representative Jane Harman, a Democrat, appeared to agree to intercede on behalf of two members of a prominent pro-Israel lobbying organization in exchange for help in lobbying top congressional Democrats to have her appointed chairwoman of the House Intelligence Committee. Now, remember this story? This is when it looked like Nancy Pelosi was going to become the speaker. And Pelosi and Harman, is my understanding, are not the best of friends. And Pelosi was not going to give this choice job to Harman. So Harman went to work. When we come back, I'll tell you some more of this. This is, Jesus, God. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. So this Time story for tomorrow about Jane Harman, who got her rear end snagged in a National Security Agency intercept of her telephone call. She was agreeing to seek favorable treatment from the Bush crime family for two pro-Israel lobbyists investigated for espionage. One official who has seen the transcripts said, of course, it's Jane Harman, a Democrat. She appeared to agree to intercede on behalf of two members of a prominent pro-Israel lobbying organization. That would be AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. One of our favorites. The official said that someone seeking help for the AIPAC employees, so these were the two, a little over a year ago, they were being investigated for espionage against the United States. The official said that someone seeking help for these guys was recorded asking Jane Harman to intervene with the Justice Department. And she responded by saying she would have more influence with a White House official that she didn't identify. Really? Really, Jane? You better luck going to the White House, huh? Okay. In return, the caller, and the transcripts are there now, the caller promised her that a wealthy California donor would threaten to withhold campaign contributions to Representative Nancy Pelosi if she, Pelosi, did not select Ms. Harman for the intelligence post. Okay, you got this? They wanted Harman to intervene on behalf of two people accused of espionage against the United States that work for AIPAC. All right. And in return, if she would do that, go to her friend in the Bush White House. This wealthy donor who normally would have contributed to Nancy Pelosi would withhold the funds unless Nancy Pelosi agreed to appoint Jane Harman as head of the House Intelligence Committee. Ms. Harman's conversations, according to the Times, were inadvertently caught by the National Security Agency eavesdroppers during an investigation. It's not exactly clear when the wiretaps, first reported by Congressional Quarterly, occurred. Ms. Harman, a longstanding supporter of AIPAC, denied today having ever spoken to anyone in the Justice Department about Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman, the two former analysts for AIPAC. Her office issued a statement saying, Congressman woman Harman has never contacted the Justice Department about his prosecution of present or former AIPAC employees. Well, but that's a denial of something you're not being accused of. your own words said that, no, not the Justice Department, I'll go to the White House. So you're denying, Ms. Harmon, that you went to the Justice Department. I don't think anyone's accusing you of doing that. The statement, her statement, did not address whether Ms. Harmon had contacted anyone at the White House or had participated in phone calls in which she was asked to intervene in exchange for help in being named chairwoman of the Intelligence Committee. Ba-da-da-da-da. David Zaidi, the FBI's former top counterintelligence official who ran the investigation of Mr. Rosen and Mr. Wiseman, said in an interview today that he was confident that Ms. Harmon had never intervened. Mr. Zaidi said, quote, in all my dealings with her, she has always been professional and never tried to intervene or get in the way of any investigation, end quote. Do-do-do-do-do. The officials who were familiar with the transcripts, speaking on condition of anonymity, also said they knew of no evidence that Ms. Harmon had intervened in the case. Forget the phone calls. The phone calls never occurred. There are no phone calls. These transcripts we have here, nothing. We are going to shred them immediately. One of the officials said he was familiar with the transcript of at least one phone call in which Ms. Harmon discussed weighing in with the department on the investigation of the AIPAC officials and her possible chairwomanship of the Intelligence Committee. As you know, she didn't get the post. The official identified the California donor as Chaim Saban, a media mogul, one of the world's richest men, and a vocal supporter of Israel. The official called the seeming deal-making shocking. Shocking, I tell you. Shocking. The official called the seem deal-making shocking, but another official who was briefed on the case said that in law enforcement circles, views were mixed about whether there was sufficient evidence to warrant a criminal inquiry into the conversations. Well, well, well. Apparently, there was an article in the Congressional Quarterly article citing unnamed president and former national security officials said that review was halted by Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez because he wanted Ms. Harmon's support in dissuading the New York Times from running an article disclosing a program of wiretapping without warrants conducted by the NSA. Ah, Jesus Christ. I quit. There's no point trying to figure all this madness out. So Jane Harmon is contacted by people who want her to go to the Justice Department and pull out of the fire the asses of these two AIPAC people who are being charged with espionage. Oh, well, I don't want to go to the Justice Department, Jane says. I'll go to the White House. I've got better contacts there. but no, nothing ever occurred. Absolutely nothing. Whatever is on the wiretap or on the transcript of the wiretap is pure speculation. Nobody's ever done anything. Now, please, everybody go away. Calm down. I'm a Democrat. I don't do these sorts of things. Go away. Goodbye. See ya. From Kay in San Francisco. Mike, today was the first day back at school after spring break. Kay is a school teacher, and it was one of those days where I found myself wondering how much longer I can continue to do this for a living. The first class of the day was U.S. government, where I made a conscious decision to stick to the textbook lesson on the workings of the Supreme Court. Next was U.S. history, where I managed to stay focused on the Cold War. So far, so good. Up to that point, I had successfully avoided a discussion of current events, something I am usually eager to incorporate into my classes. Then came world history. Today's lesson involved showing part of a biography of Joseph Stalin. Uh-oh. The program went into great detail about Stalin's use of torture to extract false confessions from his political opponents and then either executing them or sentencing them to a slower death at hard labor. That's when I could no longer ignore the elephant in the middle of my classroom. Years ago, I could have covered this as a lesson about a 20th century Soviet dictator and left it at that. But thanks to the Bush crime family, that's no longer an option. On this first day back from vacation, I found myself facing yet another one of those dilemmas that were a regular occurrence during the Bush years. I could choose to stick to the textbook and deny reality, or I could bring up the subject of the torture memos and risk getting a phone call from an angry parent. It would very likely come from a mom or dad whose radio dial is tuned to KSFO, home of Limbaugh, Hannity, and the rest of the right-wing blowhards, who are busy convincing their listeners that the torture perpetrated by the United States was necessary to win the war on terrorism. I took the risk in my world history class today because I felt that discussing the torture inflicted by other governments from a position of American moral superiority would be dishonest. I didn't tell the kids what to think. I just put it out there for them to ponder. Whether they will is another matter. Now, how many more weeks until summer vacation? Okay, in San Francisco. Want to do some phone calls? We got time? All right, let's do it. We're going to open the lines. 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. I didn't realize we had so much to cover tonight. That's the reason we've been very light on the phone calls. Also, let me bring up once again the necessity of supporting the program by subscribing to our podcasts. It's 25 cents a day. That's about it. Works out to $1.25 a week, $5 a month, $60 a year, just under $60 a year. And go to MikeMalloy.com to subscribe to the podcasts. There are other reasons to subscribe, not just the podcasts. I mean, other things that you'll get for that. And again, like I've said over and over again, because it kind of is unnerving to me. This is the first time I've ever worked strictly on my own. Without the backing of any corporation, any network, any anything. So it's just, you know, I hate to ask, but not really, because we're talking about 25 cents a show where it concerns the iPod downloads of this program and the other aspects of your subscription. There are some things coming. There are also some things available now. Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag that is up for subscribers only. The Mike Malloy Gumshoe thing, Radio Gumshoe, is going to be on the live broadcast for a while, but eventually it's going to switch over to the subscription section. So also we're going to be putting up some videos, and there's all sorts of things coming. So what we're asking you to do is to subscribe now. And like I said, 25 cents a show ain't bad. Really isn't. We got to do a break here? We do. All right. Stick around. Some phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Johnny wants a broom. Johnny wants to suck on the coke. Johnny wants a woman. Johnny wants to think of a joke. Johnny's in America. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. Ten before the hour, thanks to our crew, Kathy Bay, who engineers and produces, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor, military affairs correspondent Sharon Gordy, our economic correspondent is Bruce Enberg, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf are the program's ethical advisors, and the executive producer also is Kathy Bay. Okay, Steve is calling from Burbank, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, Mike, I started hearing about all this stuff, and I'm going like, gee whiz, the right-wingers' panties are all in a twist about human rights in Latin America.
Yeah.
And if Barack Obama, he has the power, and if he wants to walk the walk and talk the talk, our president can pardon Mumia Abu-Jamal. This man is loved all over the world. And if Raul Castro can reciprocate and show and say that was a good move, and if they release some of their so-called political prisoners, what can the right wing do about it? What can they say about it? How can they twist that?
In the first place, where it concerns Mumia, the right wing in this country would go absolutely apoplectic if any move was made for this president to pardon someone who has, let's put it where it is, someone who has been convicted of killing a cop.
That's true.
So Obama is in a rough place. What do we expect him to do? He's not a leftist. He's not a liberal. He is not interested, I don't think, and I don't know the inside of the man's mind, but I don't think he is interested in pardoning. There are several so-called political prisoners in this country that could certainly stand a pardon, but I don't see him doing that. It's not his style. He is a center, slightly left, president. And I think on so many of these issues, he's drifting even more center, maybe a little center right. But you understand what I'm saying? I would like to see him establish some kind of justice where it concerns Cuba, where it concerns Central and South America, where it concerns certain cases in this country. I just don't see it happening. Do you, Stephen?
I don't, but it's out there in the ether. Actually, I see Obama as standing to the right of where the center is supposed to be. And we can try and hold his feet to the fire. And not only that, us normal people over here, we can say things really snarky that Obama, our president, will not be allowed to say. There was a press conference, and one of the snarky right-wing reporters are all, "Oh, what are you going to do about the homeless children?" And then right after that, another one was all, "How have you asked Americans to sacrifice?"
Yeah.
And you know what? Boom, right now, Lee Raymond, $400 million, Mobil Exxon, golden parachute. What would have happened to Barack if he just said, "Well, why don't you go ask Lee Raymond to chip in? You know, why don't you go ask some of the Fortune 400 to chip in?"
I hear you, Stephen.
So Barack, our guy can't say that, but we can. So it's out there in the ether.
It is indeed, and I wonder how much of the stuff that is out there in the ether, and it is, and it gets a lot of attention, but you have to admit that most of the attention, because some of these stories some of these cases, some of these situations are very, very old in terms of Americans' attention span. I'll guarantee you not one person in a million, that means 300 people, could identify who Mumia is. So when you have that kind of a situation, I don't know. Barack Obama is going to, is going to do his presidency, and I think he'll get reelected. I think he'll do his presidency in kind of he'll flip center left barely, center right more so, center left barely, center right more so. And he'll do his thing. I think he, to some degree, and this is okay, he's aware that he's the first African American president of the United States, and I don't think he wants to do anything to cause he or his family to be shot, and I don't think he wants to do anything to cause history to look at him in an untoward way. So, I don't know. Holding his feet to the fire, pressing on the man through petitions, and he is, he is very aware of the power of the internet. I mean, my God, how could he not be? It's pretty much what raised the money that got him elected. So the pressure's got to stay on, but I don't know. The best I'm hoping for is an end to Bush policies and an attempt to establish some decent relationships with the people that hate us. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And I can't be pressing this anymore, but with Mumia, he never got a fair trial, and it was definitely extenuating circumstances. I mean, he was a political commentator, I believe, before he got it into that trouble.
I think he was. If not, he was writing for a newspaper in Philadelphia. So.
And our press, our Republican-owned media, isn't going to lay it out. If President Obama really does do what we want him to do with Mumia, then it'll just be all just blasted, And then, like I said, if Raul Castro reciprocates and lets some of his guys go, system, right? And so it's just playing politics. I mean, but this is a guy's life. I mean, he's known and loved the world over, and the world over would give support.
I hear you. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, man. Take care. We're out of time. I've got to clear the lines because we're out of time. Here's an email from Tanner. So Obama shakes the hand of Hugo Chavez. I've been told to pronounce it Chavez. Why are these fool Republicans making such a big deal? There are photos out there of Bush walking around holding hands with the Saudi king. There's one where Bush almost kisses him on the lips. Nobody said anything back then. The way the Republican so-called party is acting reminds me of a chicken without a head. It's dying very, very slowly. Thanks, Mike. You're welcome, Tanner. Yeah, what about, sure, what about that? You know, Saudi Arabia sends 15 people here to commit mass murder, and Bush, you know, sucks face with the guy. I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.